the record there, made that almost sound operatic. But we are all, that is all football fans who loved the VFL as it was, and even those who love the AFL as it is, poorer for not having Fitzroy as part of the football landscape. Of course, a forced merger with Brisbane is solace for some, not for others, but the true Fitzroy rings out through that song, and certainly through our guest tonight, Leon Weegaard, who, a Fitzroy lad, concentrated in his sporting years on water polo, representing Australia at two Olympic Games. He was at Fitzroy Football Club as a player. He saw his brother play in the ones, but then that great sporting fight and passion that he showed for country would come out in spades in his time, a difficult time for the club, as president. And he joins us now with Geoffrey Poulter. Good evening, Leon.
G'day, Mark. G'day, Geoffrey.
How are you, Leon?
Never better.
Now, I'm a little in awe here, not of Leon Weegaard, the water polo champion, though I should be, and I am a bit, and of the Fitzroy president, so impressive and really insightful. We'll talk about how you saw what was ahead for Fitzroy and did everything you could to make a better situation of it. But I certainly remember you as a broadcaster as well. And
well, going way back then, I suppose we were in the pioneering days of sport radio.
You bet. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
It was only the ABC that was doing it, and they had some very good broadcasters, but they were sort of, in fact, very, very good, and a lot of those went on to have very big commercial careers, and they're still there. But they were mainly event-oriented. We were really doing what you're doing now, which was finding out the topics of the day and yesterday and perhaps what's going to happen tomorrow. And, sport all the time. And it was a big punt by the old 3UZ in those days. But it was always a big search for 3UZ management to work out what they were going to do when there was no racing on, to fill that gap in the morning and at night through the trots and the greyhounds. So they decided on sport. Prior to that, just before I got there, it was country music. So it was a quantum leap. And then, of course, it's all over the place. But it wasn't as if we did pioneer, because it was done, as you probably know, if you look at the history of radio, it was being done by a lot of stations in America, for instance.
Yeah, it was actually a real boon for a sports nut like myself. And who were your first co-hosts?
Well, I think originally I was on at night, yes. Drive time, and we had Craig Willis actually doing the buttons.
Amazing.
And he's gone on to a pretty good career, and a good mate, by the way. I didn't really have any hosts, and the station at the time decided, because they weren't really sports people, they had no idea, really. They were very nice people, but we'd be on for 3 hours, and they gave us a guest per hour. And, you know, it was hard going. And following us, I remember we had Misery Radio, and they had some doctor who used to come in smoking dope, and he took absolute rubbish right through to midnight or something. So it was a sort of always that difficulty in trying to get the right mix to go with the racing sports. In the mornings, by the way, to answer your question, once we went to the breakfast program, well, we had Slug Jordan coming in a couple of times a week. We had Scotty Palmer for half an hour, I think, every morning. I still see Scotty, and, of course, Ray Jordan unhappily died. But we had basketball experts, and we had all sorts of people coming in regularly.
Was that Bongo Bongetti or something?
Yeah, Bongiorno, yeah. Not Bongiorno, Bongetti.
Yeah. Oh, I remember.
Bongo was on, yeah. And we had golfers, and we had all the sports we covered.
Well, you had a pretty good sporting knowledge, but you also had a lot of contacts, didn't you? Because you're involved in those things like the Carbine Club and particularly the Van Zandt Club from the early days, weren't you?
Well, I was a walk-up start, I suppose, in a way, and I've always been involved with sport. And, you know, even after my playing career as a water polo player and a footballer, a bit of a footballer, not much, but I stayed involved coaching and in administration and I've been involved with the Olympians Club, for instance, ever since I finished after the Munich Olympics in 72. I've had a non-stop role in administration there. Keeps you young, I think. Yeah, you're sort of involved and you're dealing with young people mostly. So that helps. With the Bang Sang Club that you mentioned, Jeff,
yep.
Well, that's 55 years old about now.
Right.
And that was started by the likes of Bobby Skilton, Ronnie Barassi, Teddy Whitten. And to be among all those guys, the great Sid Patterson is now no longer with Billy Williamson, the jockey. Just wonderful, wonderful. I'm in top rate, world rated. Frank Sedgman's still a member today, very active. And all these guys, Alan Ayles and a lot of the league footballers. So it's just a wonderful bunch of coterie of mates, you know, and they were very good. Graham Arthur was another one. So we're very lucky that way. And the Carbine Club was the same. There were a lot more racing blokes and a lot of administrators in the Carbine Club as well. So it made my job doing the broadcasting.
Mm.
And I never treated myself as a professional, by the way. I did it for 20 years.
Right.
But
right.
I always had a real day job.
We'll go back and have a good look at your early days at Fitzroy in a minute. But just before I forget, I see that water polo, 64-72. What happened in between? You had a good start and a good finish.
68, I was vice-captain of the 68 team, and I might say we were undefeated.
Oh, right.
Mind you, we didn't play a game, but the team was selected. We were in the draw. We were due to play America on the Saturday. Now, this is one man's story.
Mm.
Now, I guess there's another one. But one guy on our team was Bill Phillips Jr. His father was Bill Burge Phillips, who was the probably the most powerful sports official in the world.
Mm.
He was chairman of the International Swimming Federation, which covered swimming, water polo, diving, synchronized swimming, and he was really big time. Mm. All of the medals were coming through swimming, and of course they dominated the Olympic movement. The Olympic people didn't like that much. The Olympic secretary at the time was Sir Edgar Tanner, and he really owed Bill Phillips in his own mind big time. So here we are. We've picked a team. We've got Bill Phillips in the team. But, aha, what did it need? It needed Edgar Tanner to sign the entry form to go into the Olympics.
Sure.
So they wouldn't let us into the village. And the basketballers who didn't qualify used our beds in the village. So today, I mean, you can always look at those crazy number of courts that a sportsman can go to these days and wonder whether we've gone too far. But there was a case where it clearly would have got a very good hearing, at least. But we had nowhere to go. We just had to do what we were told. So that's what happened in 68.
So did you go all the way to Mexico City, the team?
Most of the guys did. I pulled out partway through because I was running a business at the time with a partner, and it was pretty clear that they were going to stand their ground on the matter. So it was just unfortunate. We paid our own way, paid all our, you know, the pre-training and all that sort of stuff. So just one of those things in the annals of sport, probably forgotten by many and perhaps should be. Fortunately, you know, there was only one guy in that team that didn't go to another Olympics. Very unfortunate for him, but very fortunate that all the rest of us went either before or after or both.
Now, Bill Jacobs, who was one of my mentors many years ago, Leon, he would tell me about the glorious days of Collingwood and Fitzroy, the tremendous amount of sporting talent that sort of grew up in that area, when he was young, but also a bit later on, and you were involved in that too. And, you know, the Collingwood and Fitzroy, the number of great players that spawned out of that area, and you... did you have a love of Fitzroy from a very young age?
Well, Billy Jacobs is a great mate. He was also a Vang Sang member. And, in fact, my partner and I approached Billy at one time to become general manager of the business.
Oh.
So I thought the world of Billy. And he was a great broadcaster, too.
Mm.
The Weegaards, to let you know the truth, the Weegaards were Fitzroy supporters, Collingwood supporters, the four boys. I had three brothers. There's one left, Albie. Keith, who played, of course, at Fitzroy and was also an Olympian in water polo. He died about 20 years ago, probably a little longer. And the other brother, Dale, he died going to see Keith play a football match in 1968, the same year as those Mexico Olympics. So... We were all, when we were young, living in Abbotsford. We were all Collingwood supporters, and Dad, who was a Fitzroy supporter, came home with what he called a Form 4. Now, it could have been the copy of the Herald. I don't know, but we all signed it. And he said, this makes you a Fitzroy player. So we thought, well, if we're going to play with them, we'd better barrack for them.
Yeah, now you mentioned, I know, I remember Bill Jacobs saying a lot of these fellas went to Collingwood Tech, but also you mentioned primary school, didn't you? St Thomas Christian Hill.
I tell you, the football factory, you know, they call Kilmore the football factory. Well, I'm on a committee. In fact, we had a meeting today to celebrate the 100th year of the start of St Thomas's Clifton Hill, a Christian Brothers College. Now, Christian Brothers Colleges in those days, in fact, the whole order was set up to educate the poorer community, boys only. Anyway, but they really were good at sports, you know, and in our school, for instance, we had all the Toomeys went there, the Collingwood Toomeys, six of them went there, including Bill Senior and Bill Junior. Keith Stackpole, the vice-captain of the Australian Test Team, I sat next to him for about 4 or 5 years in a row. Billy Stephen, who coached and played brilliantly for Fitzroy for a minute. Brownlow medalist Kevin Murray.
Yep.
Kevin Coghlan, Collingwood and Hawthorne. Serge Silvani from Carlton. And do you remember Emilio Benetti, John Benetti?
Yes, back pocket player, yes.
Yeah, he went there. Billy Strong from Collingwood and Brian Beers, who came to Fitzroy. Ray Boyd, the pole vaulter. Kevin Smith, the umpire. Fantastic list of people who have got a bit of a sporting background that went to St Thomas's. And by the way, while I'm on that topic, we're having a reunion next February on the 7th to celebrate the 100th year. The quirky thing about that is the school's been closed for 33 years. I'll throw in an email address that people can write to and register if they went to the school. We've got nearly 700, you know, which is a terrific performance. So that email, if I can do that while I'm on the spot, send us a bill, is kas42@bigpond.net.au. Anyway, that's on the 7th of February next year, and they can get more information off Google. Just go to St Thomas's Clifton Hill. So, the school, they concentrated on all that, you know, and they were tough people. They made us box, and they put us, there was no boxing ring, they put us in the handball court. Well, there's no getting out of a handball court, it's concrete.
Now, Bill Sarong would have been right in the handball court.
Well, he was an Australian champion, and by the way, Billy's going well. He went through some bad times, but we've got a mutual friend on our committee, and Billy's got a great memory of the school and most of the guys that went there. So I tell you another guy that went to the school, Ronnie Bird. Now, people will have forgotten him, but he won the very first, I think it was, Jack Ryder medal.
Early 70s, yeah.
Yeah, so he was another one that slipped through the... Oh, Ray Setchers, the jockey, isn't he?
Yeah.
Couple of bookmakers, John H. Griffith.
Right, remember him.
And Alan Cleary. So, a bit of everybody there. Of course, we also had some academics.
I was going to say, did anybody ever study?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't much chopper that sort of caper, but some of them went on. I know there was the chief scientist for the explosives industry. He went there. And a few other guys who had done very well. Bruno Grohe was one. He went to the school.
Right.
So, that's... great background. You know, nothing to do with what's happening these days. I think that was a bit later in life, and I've got no comment on that. It's just I never found any of that, but they were just great sports people, and as far as I was concerned, they did a great job, but obviously there was a couple of very, very ordinary ones among them.
You know, Kevin Murray, we've had him on the program, Leon. I think he might have mentioned that some of those fellas, Fitzroy, Collingwood, there was a line of demarcation between, if you're on one side of the street, you play with Collingwood, if you're on the other side, you play with Fitzroy. And a lot of fellas were in that situation where some of the fellas you mentioned, maybe.
Interesting about that, when I was president of Fitzroy, we had a identity crisis. You know, we were we had trouble recruiting players because the media were always poor Fitzroy, they're going to go broke soon. And in fact, the bloke named Ben Allen that went to Hawthorne and became captain, his father was a water polo player, and he advised Ben not to come to Fitzroy because they were going to go broke. So we missed a lot of players like that. So when I became president, I think it certainly was when David Parkin was coach, I said, let's get some of these older players with a bit of the culture of Fitzroy to talk to the players, and it was Butch Gale, who the first one we had up to do that.
Okay.
And that was the night that Butch died, and Butch was a great family friend, very, very close, the Gales and the Wigards, and the boys are still friends of ours now. But Butch died while he was addressing the players about that very issue, about it was street against street. And then when those streets got together, they'd pick up a team to play against Collingwood.
Hmm.
You know, and paper footies or whatever else they had in those days. So you're quite right, it was tribal. And that was its strength. Now, of course, the suits that came into the game were able to convince the world, and they were right in the long run, by the way, that football had to go national for its own survival. It competes against a lot of other sports and television rights and all that, so it had to happen. But, God, we've lost a lot.
We certainly have lost a lot. And that period, that when you were president of Fitzroy, these were tumultuous times. Fitzroy was actually still playing some decent football, but it had become apparent that there was financial problems of the club. The first time, I think, 1978, when it became clear that the club was not trading with... It was was making a loss every year. During
That's interesting, Mark. I can only tell you what I was told at the time. I joined the board as a result of running a big fundraiser at Fitzroy's request. It was the first ever breakfast before a test match. And it was the 1977 centenary test match. And going back to what Jeff asked me before about having contacts in the sporting world, I was able to get some very good friends of mine, including the late Keith Miller, Tony Gregg. I didn't know him very well, but I got him through Greg Chappell, who came. Hooksy came. And we had this fantastic panel at the Hilton Hotel before the first day of play in the centenary test. And it was sold out in about a day, and Fitzroy made an absolute fortune out of it. So they put me on the committee. Then I saw the financial position of the club, and it was terrible.
Yeah.
They then told me that they'd had this supporter whose wife was a Melbourne supporter. He was a Melbourne supporter. She was a Fitzroy supporter. And he wanted to know what Fitzroy needed to get a good field, a team on the field. And they said something like, you need a bit of a cough there.
Do you want to grab some water, Leon?
No, that's all right. I'll get by that. I've had enough water in my life, thank you. About 40 years of water polo. Anyway, what happened? They went out and bought the players, and the guy went to America to do some business to come back and never return. So they got Bernie Quinn and a lot of other guys to make a... And that was the basis of a very good team. But there was no money. And then we hit the 20% interest rate days, and that was the end of it all.
During that period, and there was a famous quote attributed to yourself, well, not attributed, that you said, and looking forward, you said there was a 50% chance that Fitzroy wasn't going to survive. And so during that period, there were opportunities that appeared to slip through the grasp of Fitzroy, but that you were at the forefront of creating. And one of them was to move the club up to Brisbane as a standalone entity a decade before it actually happened, in a move that would have ultimately been far more advantageous and far more Fitzroy-esque than the final situation. Leon, as we pick up the discussion, that sport that you played, water polo, is not arguably, it is the most demanding physical sport. We
can't have a rest, can you?
Oh, well, you see what goes on above the water looks painful enough, and underneath they're kicking and gouging. Of course, there was the famous Russian-Hungary water polo match in Melbourne in 1956. You hide half the sports person. They get up to plenty under the water, don't you?
I used to tell people that most of the injuries you have are facial, cut ear, eyebrows, broken noses, teeth knocked out, burst eardrums, facial. Mind you, if you get kicked in the nuts, a facial pull's incredible.
Let's that's magnificent. Let's return to the Lions. And I was asking the question about the fact that you saw what was coming potentially, and there was a chance for Fitzroy to have a far more advantageous and, as I said, Fitzroy-esque move up north to Brisbane 10 years prior to the forced marriage that we now know as the Brisbane Lions.
Yeah, well, I was actually, I mean, I think in these days I'm president of a thing called Community Clubs Victoria, and that looks after the interests of all not-for-profit clubs in Victoria. And one of the things that we have to keep telling clubs about is governance. Well, governance really amounts to doing the right thing, both with each, with all the people at the club, whether you're the president or the people down the line or whatever. But also it means that you've got to be able to read a balance sheet and work out whether you're actually trading while you're in a viable position. So I think football was such a fluent thing at the time. They were selling licenses, and the going rate was about $3 million. But when the league sold the license to Adelaide, they made it $3 million, all right, and the $3 million was on the Fitzroy board, profit and loss as a, or balance sheet rather, as a value, $3 million for the license. But when they sold the one to Adelaide, they gave it to them interest-free over 10 years. Well, that's not $3 million anymore, it's less than that.
Mm. Yeah, of course.
So that really brought our value down, and we're always under pressure. But keep in mind, it was because of the... Now, I don't know, I can't get people to confirm this, but what I was told was they spent a lot of money to get a good team on the field, and the guy that was going to back it up just never came good. So, and then they hit that 20% interest rate thing, and at that time, Collingwood... I remember when Collingwood announced that they had 10,000 supporters, we had about 3,000 or 4,000, which was about the going rate. We said, how can we beat these crowds? Yeah, you can never... So things were really crooked. We were paying 20% interest on a big loan. We had, about a third the number of supporters that Collingwood had. They used to get all the good reports in the paper on the television, and we couldn't get a game on telly. So things, you know, really were... One felt as though we were being targeted almost. That's how bad it got.
You know, I mean, Parkin saying that he and the players wanted to go. But did it ever get close? I mean, I know. And how
well,
much? And 10 years later, they got $6 million to do it. I mean, was there anything equivalent of that to do it in those days?
Well, there were promises around from the AFL. They were very keen for someone to nick off, you know. And I was on the AFL board when South Melbourne were, that was a dreadful time to be around because they were really dragged and screaming up there, as you know, and Bill Collins and all those other good people around South Melbourne, they did their best, but eventually they finished up being up there and the rest is history. Now, as far as Fitzroy is concerned, I actually was always against going up north. Never, ever did I agree with going up north. Mm-hmm. I thought if we had to do something, we'd be better off merging with a club in Melbourne. In fact, I personally was keen on a deal with Melbourne Footy Club because you knew that after all those struggling years, if you joined Melbourne, who had at that time a very bad association with a cricket club, but I knew that could be fixed. So I thought that if we could go there, you would no longer, or even though you'd lose the name Fitzroy, it would be Melbourne Lions and pretty well our colours. Anyway, none of those things worked.
And, of course, the one that most famously didn't work was the 11th hour saving of the Footscray Football Club by an injunction put forward by Irene Chatfield, because there were jumpers already created and Fitzroy Footscray were... It was almost over the line, was it not?
There was a suggestion of a jumper. It was never adopted.
Okay. Mm.
That was only a sample.
But Whitten, Sutton and all those guys supported it, didn't they? I mean...
Well, don't forget that they were in the same position as I was just describing Fitzroy. They couldn't see any hope either, so they thought it was a good idea. But that didn't work. The media got onto that. Harry Beitzel and others, you know. And then it was a good thing for Footscray because it got all those people from the western suburbs realising they were going to lose their club.
It was a good thing for Footscray, but it appeared... Not a problem. It appeared not to be a good thing for Fitzroy, Leon, and... It was almost, when that didn't happen, Footscray, as you said, were re-energised. They made the bumper stickers. They were the defiant ones. And it seemed as though from that point on, the public show of both clubs' lack of money really counted against Fitzroy from that day onwards, and they were really viewed as second-class citizens almost from that moment.
Yeah, we all seem to be the losers, but keep in mind that that whole thing wasn't inspired by us, of course. It came from the AFL.
Ross Oakley?
Yeah, it was Ross and he's Borden.
Graham Samuel.
And how about the sponsorship and the possible ownership by Hecron that was denied by the then VFL, soon to be AFL? But there seemed to be a number of occasions where Fitzroy had a way out and VFL stood in their way.
Well, funny, isn't it? When maybe we didn't do it the right way. North Melbourne seemed to have a private ownership going at one time, and that seemed to be endorsed. But they stepped in the way of Hecron. Whether that was the right way of going or not is another question we'll never know the answer to. But I think they were looking for a head.
Yeah, that's no question about that. I mean, they even knocked you back on a massage parlor at one stage. Like.
No.
Sponsorship.
Now you've got to be coughing. We knocked that back. We thought the certain people around the place had cut it all out in contra.
Leon, just very quickly on the final merger that was Brisbane and Fitzroy. We know that there are many who've embraced it. There are others who haven't. David McMahon famously will never be a Brisbane Lions person. Others are. Where do you sit on that?
Well, I wasn't around when that happened, but I've converted. I'm a Brisbane Lions supporter. I looked around, I must say. There's a few, like any other person, you like some clubs and you don't like others. That's the nature of the beast. That's why we call ourselves supporters. But I looked at a few other clubs and I just couldn't sort of change the colours. So Brisbane converted my life membership of Fitzroy to Brisbane, so I followed them ever since. But I feel very sorry for those people who were lost, given up footy entirely. They're the sad ones.
That's the worst thing that ever happened to footy, really, isn't it?
Oh, well, you know, they can
in my lifetime, anyway.
Well, it is for me as well. I really believe that. They can put a plaque on a building in East Melbourne and you can't knock it down because it's... National Trust or Heritage. How could the Fitzroy Football Club, the first team to 6 premierships, the team that produced Bunton and Murray, how could that not be Heritage listed?
8 premierships, actually.
But the other thing, we helped
build Waverley Park. We helped build the AFL up to what it was today at the time. You know, we had a lot of skin in the game and we had a lot of assets that were ours, but we were never able to convert them.
And... to those Fitzroy supporters, there are still gatherings and we have many loyal Fitzroy supporters that actually ring up this program. It's a great opportunity to play the song. Do you ever get to any of those Fitzroy Football Club, from, not the current form of that club in the amateurs, who are doing very well to be in B grade, by the way, but do you ever get to any of the functions, the old Fitzroy functions?
I see Arthur Wilson a lot. He's the guy that puts all the memorabilia together. He did a wonderful job at Etihad Stadium. If you haven't seen that, folks, go and have a look at the Fitzroy assembled goods down there. It's just fabulous. Really well done, and Arthur's done most of that himself.
Well, that at Etihad, I've got to tell you, Leon, that most times I'm at Etihad Stadium during the game, because I love going there when I'm on my own, I love walking through that museum. It is fantastic.
Well, I'll just tell my cousin, Paul Wigo, that he owes us a photo of his father, Keith, to go in there. We're short of a photo of Keith Wigo. But to answer your question, I spoke at the amateurs last year at one of their games, and I missed this. They had one a couple of weeks ago, but I was interstate. I go to anything I'm invited to pretty well, you know, but a lot of things you can't get to because I've got a lot of things. I've got 58 hats I wear, probably none of them square, but anyway, I go to as many things as I can, but yeah, there's only 7 days in the week. So, but I love the old-timers. You know, I still see a lot of guys that played with Keith. You know, I know Graham McKenzie and his wife, Pat, very well. He's in Cook Health there at Torquay now. We're losing him, of course. Ray Slocum died last year. And it's very sad to see them all going.
We've come to the end of the interview.
Oh, I'm sorry about all that.
Oh, no, it's been not only...
We're trying to pick the hymn, you know.
Not only illuminating, there's been interesting moments, which probably sums up your time at Fitzroy.
And oh, yeah. A lot of people barrack for Fitzroy through thin and thin.
and, Leon, I just want to have one last indulgence for myself, and that is that, as I said, I absolutely loved and in no small part was inspired by your radio program. And in doing a bit of research on you, we also share a birthday on the 22nd of May. So I feel a kinship, and I also feel a debt of gratitude. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy birthday last week, and thanks for having us on.